Now, in the next slide, we are now in this process of using molecular and biochemical techniques to identify the specific proteins in the fractions, which are recognized by the antibody. And to date, we have used certain molecular biology techniques, running the proteins in these fractions out on gels, using a technique called Western blotting, which tells us which proteins are recognized by the antibodies. We have identified a number of potential targets. We're also working closely with the genome sequence and the bioinformatics, because that's also given us information on possible targets. We can predict proteins that are on the surface of the organism, for example, or proteins that are really essential for function. We have produced anti-sera against a number of these potential targets, and the process is that we will then test an anti-sera that's been generated against these specific targets. We will test that with anti-sera to see whether the antibodies will inhibit methane production in the in vitro cultures. That will then tell us whether that particular antigen is a worthwhile target to pursue. Okay, and since we want to identify and test a range of candidate antigens from our model antigens, we're also working with other species of antigens, because the rumen contains a number of different species, and for a vaccine to work, we have to be able to target a broad range of species. The vaccine will likely need a cocktail of antigens, antigens from perhaps a number of these different species, or at least antigens that are common between different species. Once we have found some effective antigens, we will formulate the cocktail into a prototype vaccine, and we will then begin to test the vaccine in animals to see whether it works in the real world to mitigate emissions of methane. And finally, the acknowledgement. There's a group of scientists, including myself, at the Research Hopkirk Research Institute working on this project. We have good collaborations with Ag Research Grasslands. We also have a collaboration with Gray Cook at the University of Otago, and the program is funded under contract to the BGCRC. Thank you.
That's wonderful, Neil. Thanks. Graham, are you on the line?
Yeah. I'm back from the fire drill.
Oh, brilliant. That's great. It was good. It was just a drill.
I'd like to cover for you.
So we'll go ahead with your one now, Graham.
Okay. Righto. I assume that's up on screen now.
That's it, yep.
Sorry about that. I'm just going to talk briefly about the Rumen of Antigen Genomics program that we're carrying out under the PGGRC. The essential problem with the Rumen is that it's upstream of the normal digestive stomach of the ruminant, the abomasum, and because of that, what happens in the rumen determines the nutrition of the animal, and methane formation is one of the processes that occurs upstream of the abomasum. So in the rumen, we get feed coming in and being digested. It forms a bit of a raft material on top of the liquid phase of the rumen. But microbes break that down, that forage material down by the action of enzymes through to sugars. And the microbial fermentation produces a wide range of different acids here, volatile fatty acids mainly. But the ones that are important for animal production are acetate, propionate, and butyrate, which are absorbed by the animal and then used for energy and growth. The problem with methane formation is formate, hydrogen, and CO2, shown here, are used by methanogens in the rumen to make methane. And that methane goes into the gas phase of the rumen, and then is eructated back out through the mouth. So the problem is you're getting conversion of plant material into methane, and then that goes out to the atmosphere. So that's the essential problem. We've looked at the methanogen Methanobrevibacter ruminantium M1T. The T refers to it being the type strain of the species. It's an organism which was originally isolated in the USA, but we've found that it's prominent amongst New Zealand ruminants, and it's a representative, a good representative of one of the main groups of methanogens found both in New Zealand ruminants and other ruminants around the world. As part of the Pastoral Greenhouse Gas Research Consortium project, we've sequenced the genome of this organism, and the aim is to, well, really to better understand the organism, but also to identify gene and protein or enzyme targets, which are both conserved within methanogens but also specific to methanogens, which are suitable as targets for methane mitigation technologies. Now, this table is just a brief summary of the main features of our organism, M. ruminantium M1, shown in this column here. Obviously from the bovine rumen. Its genome is a little bit under 3 megabases, and if you compare it with the other genome sizes of other closely related methanogens from outside of the rumen, it's actually about a megabase larger, and that's due mainly to a large number of surface proteins, adhesin-like proteins indicated down here, and also the presence of a prophage genome within the methanogen genome. Now, a prophage is basically a virus which lives within the genome, well, it lives within the methanogen, but its genes are encoded within the methanogen genome, and occasionally it will replicate itself and hop out and kill the cell. But the Methanobrevibacter ruminantium genome is quite distinct from the other methanogen genomes that have so far been sequenced. So what we've done is we've used that genome information to then try and identify a variety of different targets, and these are shown schematically here. On the left-hand side, we've got the main methanogenesis pathway. So we've got CO2 and hydrogen being combined in a 7-step pathway, which basically stepwise reduces CO2 right through to methane. Now, we've looked at the gene sequences of each of these different enzymatic steps and compared them with other genes, and we can find that there are at least 2 of those steps which are highly conserved amongst methanogens and also specific to methanogens, and we can target those via small molecule inhibitors. So the idea there is, what if we can determine the structure of these enzymes which are mediating these steps, we can design small molecule inhibitors which interfere with those enzymes and block this methane formation reaction occurring here. Down the bottom here, we've also got another depiction of what's called a ATP synthase molecule. Now, that molecule basically makes energy. So the process of making methane over here leads to an extrusion of sodium ions outside the cell. Those sodium or protons go back into the cell and generate energy along the way. So this enzyme here is very important in making energy for the methanogen to live. So it's a good target for methane mitigation. So again, we believe that we can look at the structure of this particular enzyme complex and design small molecule inhibitors to inhibit it. So that work's ongoing at the moment. Over here on the right, by looking at the genes within the genome, we can predict which ones encode proteins which sit on the outside of the methanogen cell. And Neil's just talked about the vaccine project going on. So this is really the bioinformatic part of that project where we're predicting which proteins are available on the surface of the organism and suitable as good vaccine antigens. And then our job is to produce those proteins and send them up to Neil and his group with Bryce Puddle at the Hopkirk to test them out for the suitability of being good vaccine antigens. Now, as I said before, one of the unexpected discoveries from the methanogen genome was the presence of a prophage genome encoded within the methanogen genome. And this is interesting both biologically but also from a practical point of view. Phage, when they replicate themselves, they have to get outside the methanogen cell. So they encode an enzyme which allows them to break open the methanogen cell. It's called a lytic enzyme. Now, that lytic enzyme can act in both ways, in the sense that it can lyse a cell from the inside out, but it can also lyse a cell from the outside in. So this lytic enzyme is a potential target or enzyme that we can try and use to break down methanogen cells in the rumen specifically. And this work by a colleague here at Grasslands has expressed this enzyme, and we've proven that it can break down the cells of Methanobrevibacter ruminantium. So that's a brief summary of the Methanogen Genome Sequencing Project, and I'd just like to acknowledge the people involved in that project. Here on the left, Bill Kelly, Sinead Leahy, Eric Altman are the main contributors, and then a range of other people who have contributed to the project, but also PGGRC for funding and for funding as well. Thank you.
That's wonderful. Thanks, Graham. We'd like to open up for questions now. So if you do have a question, please state your name and organisation before you ask the question. So go ahead on the conference if you have any questions. Well, maybe I'll kick off with one.
Yeah, Richard Rennie.
Sorry. Yep, go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, question for Mark. Mark, in the budget, David Carter announced the Centre for Agricultural Gas Research starting by early next year with about a $5 million input, I think. Where does that leave you guys, given that you've been working on this since 2002? It seems strange that we would have a second body essentially doing what I would have thought you guys are doing.
Well, if you look at the briefings, on the face of it, you might say that, Richard, I suppose, but if you look at the briefings, it's clear that the government's also indicated that they want to make sure we build on what we've got. So we're in discussions with the players and the process that they've got set out. Looking forward, we would see this as a $5 million a year grant for the next 10 years is what the money is, what they've talked about in the budget announcement. And our perspective on that is to say, well, we want to work with this opportunity and make sure it can accelerate and broaden our approaches. So we would be looking to work with it into the future. But it's right. it's certainly a new initiative, and there's still some stuff being found out about it. But we think it's a positive move.
So you don't see it as a doubling up or anything on what you're already doing, or?
Well, that's the challenge. I mean, from where I sit, we've got to make sure that it's not a doubling up. And the way to do that is to be well engaged with all the players. There's no doubt, I don't think, that the methane space, we've been the major players in New Zealand and probably internationally in the comprehensive approach we've taken. So activity in that space logically will sit alongside, or we'd be building on what we're doing, and we're just working through those options over the next few months.
Okay,
Thanks, Mark, and thanks for the question. Any other questions there on the conference?
Yes, Philippa Jamieson, pardon me, Philippa Jamieson from Organic NZ magazine.
Go ahead, Philippa.
Question for Mark. I'm interested in, you had a list of priorities, and right down the bottom was reducing livestock numbers, and just above that was plant breeding. I'm just interested in who might be doing research into specific plants or mixtures of plants that will reduce methane emissions.
Well, there's probably a number of groups who could do that. I mean, there are activities in the likes of grasslands. They're studying pasture genomics. There's another company, a research consortium that's looking at trying to find plant attributes and get those into plants as well as PGG Wrightsons. But the challenge for us in that space has been to find the component parts and the nature of plants that actually lead to low methane and or low nitrous oxide. That's the hard part, to actually find what part of a plant or the nature of how a plant is digested so that you can then go and select it. We've certainly been taking the attitude of going down trying to find those component parts and then be able to go back to plant breeders and say, well, these are the traits, or I suppose initially, if we can find these components, and they've been pretty, and it's not clear, that's the area it's got quite some challenges in it, whether we can find plants that already have some of those attributes and maybe they could be encouraged more, or we understand how they fit agronomically.
Yeah, I understand legumes in particular lucerne, bird's foot treefall, and there's a few others that will reduce methane emissions.
Well, they look to. I mean, if you look at the way lotus, yeah, bird's foot treefall has shown, like, because it has some contains some tannins, it does seem to have some influence. But agronomically, how do you get that into the diet day in, day out? That's the challenge we've got here. And being able to have a farm system that supports those types of plants to reduce it.
Hmm.
So there's opportunity, but we don't understand quite clearly. It's not as simple as saying if you reduce the amount of fibre in the plant, then you'll get less methane. It's obvious. It's quite a complex sort of interaction between the forage and microbes in the host, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Philippa and Mike. Any other questions on the conference?
Anne Lee here from the Dairy Exporter magazine.
Go ahead, Anne.
Thanks. I just wonder what the impact is of have you measured the impact on animal production or the animal health by reducing methanogen activity?
I suppose that covers for me again. To be honest, we haven't had a situation where we've been able to consistently reduce methane for a long enough period of time to say that we're going to lift animal productivity or harm it. Some of our early work has sort of shown that it seems to be advantageous, but we really don't have any good concrete evidence. We've had one trial where we've used a knockdown for methane, but and our milk production stayed more or less the same, but it was a fairly harsh approach to take. So I think we're still early days, but it's the having found a mitigation that sort of is doing something, the next step is to put it in and see what happens in the productivity. It's a key part of our program.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the question. Any other questions there?
I suppose just to finish off on that in the sense of the opportunity, there's about 8 to 11% of the energy loss in methane, which Graham referred to. Our hope is that if we can actually reposition that to go through into the pathways that leads to more volatile fatty acids, the energy sources, then maybe we can actually enhance productivity by reducing methane. It's a waste product at the moment. That's a theory that does the rounds, and I'm sure Graham would agree on that. That does hold some opportunity, we think, still.
Okay, thanks, Mike. I think there was one other question there.
Richard Rennie, New Zealand Farmers Weekly again.
Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
Question, Mark. The latest sheep figures, which are down again, I think another 3% on last year, seem to show that as an industry, sheep farmers are actually meeting and even exceeding their 1990 emission levels and by default the Kyoto Protocol at that point. And it seems that the bulk of emissions are therefore the increase from agriculture is coming from dairying. Is there not a need to maybe focus away, less emphasis maybe on sheep research and putting all your effort into cows?
That's one way of dealing with it, I suppose. I mean, that's sort of taking the bottom line one of reduced stock numbers, which has been driven by economics and a number of other factors. If you look at the total emissions from the sheep and beef sector and the dairy sector, we're still about 50-50. So, yes, on the straight reduction of numbers, you could say the sheep sector is meeting the Kyoto targets. But over time, that's going to probably disappear or the targets may get harder. And we're still going to need some sort of mitigation solution if carbon cost is going to be leveled at agriculture's feet. And obviously that's all stuff that's still being worked through and developed in policy over the next little while. But I think in the sense you're right, but we are looking at ruminants. And although cattle and sheep are and deer are all a little bit different, these are sort of fundamental approaches which we are hoping to be able to utilise across all of those ruminant species. So hopefully we can cover them all, and obviously some solutions will fit more easily with an intensive handling of animals than others. But we need new solutions for both.
The heritability angle of breeding in dairy stock, I mean, we use that for all sorts of other traits.
Yes.
What are your results showing on that in terms of, that's probably the most easily dispersed solution, if you like. How strong is the heritability for reduced methane outcome in cattle, for example?
Look, we've only done some very sort of rudimentary analysis of that, but it looks like it's around about similar to milk quality traits. So it can be used for breeding. I think we've got confidence. The repeatability is one of the issues that we've just, but we've only got sort of small databases that really we need to get the numbers to give real good faith to that. But from what we can see, we've got consistently high and low emitting animals under different feeds. It's sort of the animals that you see in a low emitting on a lucerne-based diet, also a low emitting different emissions on a pasture-based diet. And so we've got some confidence that we do have enough. But the rub, you're right, breeding is an opportunity, and the piece that we'll have to be really careful and work our way through is to make sure it's not in, that it's a positive trait to select for rather than a negative one.
Yeah.
It's Anne Lee here again from the Dairy Exporter magazine. So does that mean that you are you looking at using things like LIC and Ambridge genomic selection systems?
Yes.
Have you identify the genes that might be involved in this?
Yep, our program in animal variation is looking at trying to find some genetic. You know, the key issue that we have to do in this whole space is find a cheap, cost-effective phenotypic measure that we can use to select. And like for milk production, people measure milk. Same sort of thing here. Methane is, we use research methods now to find the high and low emitting animals, but those are far too expensive and they're just impractical for farmers to utilise. So our study and the research is looking for blood markers or genes that we can then perhaps screen those animals that are being used in the dairy herds or in the sheep through Sheep Improvement Limited and the likes, and be able to actually use that selection in part of a trait-based index-based type approach in the future.
Right, so there's a project going on in that area?
Absolutely, it's part of our program of work, yep.
Okay. There was another question I had too about the way that methane is measured.
Yes.
There's a lot of debate as to the, it's all done on a research basis, it's done by extrapolating out using the EC6 markers and things, and there's a lot of debate as to how reliable that is and the variability around it. Are you doing other work on trying to find better ways of measuring actual methane?
Our program of work's not necessarily looking at that, although there is research around the world and in New Zealand where they're trying to establish perhaps more accurate methods. The methods we use when we've got animals in respiratory chambers are recognised as the gold standard. Like that's an enclosed box where air in, air out, we know exactly what's going on. So in the sense of that, we can certainly utilise that information to be able to identify. And in terms of a national account, the inventory, it's been based on animal production and animal intake, which is still the major driver of what methane production. So I think that's internationally accepted. They are estimates, but they are internationally accepted. And if we're all on the same playing field, then, you know, that's the way it works. But, yes, we want to be more accurate. The last thing you want to have is base your strategies or your approaches on and then find that the method you used was incorrect. But we do have methods where we've got absolute confidence in what's going on. Their practical application in a grazing system, which is what New Zealand's bread and butter is, you know, means we need to have some steps along the way.
Okay.
If I could contribute to that, it's Adrian Walcroft here, Landcare Research. I've got colleagues down at Lincoln who's developed another technique or using another technique called micrometeorology, where you put instrumentation across a paddock or of grazing animals and directly measure the methane emissions from those, you know, 40 or 50 cattle grazing on a paddock. And those measurements have come to match very well with data that come out of the chambers.
Is it measuring? Can you explain what it's measuring?
It's measuring methane. We have instruments, lasers that you shoot across a paddock, and the methane emitted from the cows absorbs radiation from the laser, so you can get a measurement of the concentration, and if you do that at a series of heights above the paddock, you get a gradient, and that tells you something about the flux or the amount of methane coming from the animals.
Wow. Very high tech.
It is. Oh, it's brilliant. Thanks, Anne, for the question. I think we'll wrap things up there as some of the speakers. Yep, go ahead. Is that Gareth?
Yeah, it is.
Go ahead, Gareth.
Gareth from Arden here from Hot Topic. I just wanted to go ask a very quick question about you're using a saliva approach to affect the ecology of the methanogen in the rumen, and I'm just wondering if there are other approaches that you could use to affect the kind of mix of bugs in the rumen and what they do, perhaps by finding strains of the bugs that produce less methane and then affecting the populations in the rumen.
Is that directed towards me?
Well,
probably Neil.
Anyone who can answer, basically.
I'll have a crack too.
The difficulty with that is methanogens depend absolutely on methane production to produce their energy.
Yeah.
So, and those that grow more slowly or produce less methane are likely to be washed out of the rumen. The rumen is a continuous flow through, so organisms have to grow quickly enough to maintain their populations in the rumen. So while there are a variety of different methanogens already present in the rumen, they've got subtle adaptations or variations which allow them to occupy slightly different niches but all maintain themselves in the rumen.
Right, okay.
So yeah, trying to find a low-producing methanogen is probably not a good strategy. It's we believe it's better to try and come up with an inhibition which targets all of them collectively. And in fact, if you only knock out a subpopulation, the likelihood is that the remainder of the methanogens will expand to fill that niche. So you really do need to try and target them all collectively.
Is it possible, or might it be possible, or are there bugs that could use the metabolic pathways that the methanogens use that don't produce methane?
There are organisms called acetogens, which basically take hydrogen and CO2 and make acetate, which is one of the volatile fatty acids which the animal uses. So that's what we're trying to encourage. The difficulty is those types of organisms operate at higher hydrogen concentrations, and they don't dominate in the rumen because the methanogens are much better at capturing that hydrogen. So we believe that if we can knock down the methanogen populations or remove the methanogen populations, then those acetogen populations will actually kick in and start to use that hydrogen and CO2. So there are resident acetogens. They're just not very big in numbers because the methanogens dominate the hydrogen utilization.
Thanks.